Today on Family Talk.
Most experts are expecting the Supreme Court to strike down all laws prohibiting gay marriage in the United States when they announce their ruling this June. Today, Dr. James Dobson interviews three people on what we can and should do about it. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and today we're going to discuss the upcoming Supreme Court ruling on gay marriage. This is a monumental decision that we need to be informed about, but also prepared for how to respond. Joining my dad today on the program are three experts on the issue of marriage in the United States. The first is Brian Brown, who is the president of the National Organization for Marriage and the one responsible for organizing the March for Marriage, which happens this Saturday in Washington, D.C. Our second guest is the co-founder of Mr. Brown's organization, Maggie Gallagher, who is a well-known author and speaker in the fight for marriage. Finally, my dad will be joined with his great friend, the pastor from Skyline Wesleyan Church in San Diego, Dr. Jim Garlow, who has stood up for this issue faithfully for years. Let's get to the program now. Here is Dr. James Dobson on today's special edition of Family Talk.
Well, when we ended the program last time, I had just mentioned that my greatest concern about same-sex marriage is what it does to children. Because if they're in a home with only one sex among their parents, they're not going to have the benefits of a masculine and feminine role model, and they will be affected by that. The research is starting to show that. And I'm going to begin this conversation right there, Brian, by talking to you, because you have eight children, is that
right? Yes, eight.
And what's the age range?
From 2 up to 13.
What would it do to you to think of your children being raised without either a mother or a father?
Well, I mean, part of the reason why I'm so passionate about what I do is my children. It's obvious that they would be very different if they didn't have both a mother and a father, that they understand that they're getting something different. It's love, but it's a different type of love from a mother and a father. And they know what I do, and they've seen at times, they've been at events where folks may not be all that kind to us. They may say, hello, bigots, whatever else. But they know that what I'm doing is standing up for the truth of marriage. What I see are the folks that are supporters, the regular folks, Memories Pizza in Indiana, where the owner was asked, would you cater a same-sex wedding? He says no. The whole world comes down on him. People are sending him death threats and messages. The bakers and the florists who refuse because of their conscience to take part in a same-sex union ceremony, the hate that they undergo. People need to wake up to the reality that when you stand for this truth right now, you're going to have to suffer a bit.
Jim, you've already been through this drill. You helped to lead the Proposition 8 campaign to get marriage defined as being between one man and one woman. You're in San Diego there, so you played a key role, and I think maybe the primary role in leading that charge. You took a lot of heat, didn't you? Describe what it was like for you.
Well, it got so hostile, even we literally had to close our entire website down. And many of the pastors across the state at that point, across the state of California, for the first time had to have 24/7 security. Prior to that time, that was just not the normative pattern. But it picked up at that point, and then security in all the churches that I know of that stand for this truth have really increased their security. But I want to say on a more positive side, we are just now beginning to gear up for, I believe Maggie said, Robbie George called it peaceful resistance. Matt Staver is an attorney guiding us on what might be called civil disobedience, but
and
the bottom line—
he was on those three programs
yes,
that we did.
And we have him coming to San Diego to speak to a large group of pastors in June on this very topic. And we're just beginning to gear up. The other side has had 40 to 50 years to destroy this nation. And I want to, if I can add a little bit of a positive in, Brian helped organize a major event recently at the Vatican in Rome, where 15 world religions came, and if I were to summarize it in a sentence, all of them affirmed that marriage is one man, one woman. That means that beyond special revelation of the Bible, natural revelation says that man and woman is what comprises marriage. It's even known naturally. And he organized an event in Paris we were recently at as well. And when you open the program, you talk about 18 17 or 18 countries so far out of approximately 200 on the earth have affirmed so-called same-sex marriage. So this battle is far from over. We praise God for resistance growing up out of Africa has been phenomenal. And they've actually blocked all kinds of activity at the United Nations in this area.
As a matter of fact, I'm sorry for interrupting, but you keep hitting things I care about. In Proposition 8, you won that vote eventually because of the majority in the African-American community.
47% of Anglos voted for traditional marriage, 49% of Asians, based on the best research I've seen, 56% of Hispanics, and 70% of African-Americans.
My goodness.
And where they've also carried it, just like the United Methodist Church as a denomination, it would have same-sex marriage established had it not been for the African delegates who have held it off at this point. And I'm simply saying we in this country are learning to gear up for resistance, and we are not giving up under any condition. I'd like to be so naive as to suggest in the same way Roe v. Wade, after an awful lot of years, we're winning it in the public market square of ideas. The devastation from this could come so severely that years from now, if the nation is not completely destroyed, that we could see a recycling and a revisiting of God's purpose for marriage.
Yeah, but what damage will be done
horrific.
To how many people?
Well, horrific. But wars
that
do
happens.
That, unfortunately.
Yeah, they do. Maggie, I heard you gasp a minute ago.
Well, you know, what concerns me the most right now is it's the attacks on the livelihoods of ordinary people. We've talked about the florist and the baker. But I wanted to commend Brian, too, for working on a marriage and religious freedom bill with others that would at least prevent the kind of government discrimination that led at the Atlanta mayor to fire Kelvin Cochran, a wonderful fire chief, for writing a Bible study book for his church that contained two paragraphs on sexual purity.
And what we're already seeing is the government using its power to punish, repress, and marginalize individuals, businesses, and organizations that act out the truth on marriage. And MARFA, the Marriage and Religious Freedom Act, does what should already be done, but the government is increasingly encroaching on. It would stop the federal government from removing the 501c3 tax-exempt status of organizations that live out the truth of marriage. It would stop firing in contracts. There's even a move in federal contracts to start discriminating against Christians. It would stop that. And there are a few good folks leading the charge, Senator Cruz and Senator Lee in the Senate, Raul Labrador, and a number of other co-sponsors in the House. The bill was put forward in 2013. It will be again put forward this year. We need a vote on this. People need to contact their legislators, make sure that they affirm it. I know that our current president is not going to sign this into law. But we need to get movement on it, and people need to understand that we need to elect a president that at the very least can protect Americans from their government and punishing them for standing up for marriage. And I also think that I'm optimistic, too, even with all this bad, that if we had a ballot initiative on this in states around the country, we would see large majorities stand up and say the government shouldn't be punishing Christians and other people of faith because of their views. People shouldn't be getting fired because they wrote a book about their Christian view. People still don't accept that.
I mentioned in my introduction yesterday that this Supreme Court decision, if it is handed down, will change everything. It touches every dimension of society. And I mentioned the churches and the schools and businesses and many others, certainly families. Another one that I didn't mention is those who hold state licenses. Already, and in fact, just recently, the president, President Obama, issued a statement that we must make it illegal for a counselor, a state licensed counselor, to offer any kind of counseling care if it is not to affirm homosexuality. Consider how outrageous this is. Suppose a parent has a 13, 14 year old son, and maybe because of abuse from who knows where, maybe because of what he's been taught in school. For whatever reason, he has a sexual identity crisis. He does not really know who he is, and he's asking questions about that. And what the president has said, in effect, is that it would be illegal for those parents to go find a counselor who believes in masculinity and femininity and gender as we have known it, and would not be able to get the assistance of a professional.
You're probably unaware of this, Dr. Dobson, but our church was in a lawsuit over this very issue. On my staff is a wonderful ordained pastor who's also a licensed counselor. He actually owns 16 counseling centers. But ours was the lawsuit in California, which we lost in this issue, and he cannot legally, as a pastor on my church staff, legally in the state of California, because he's also a counselor, discuss with somebody under the age 18 that they could possibly be anything other than homosexual. It shocks me every once in a while what we're talking about. We're talking about trying to keep people from ripping up babies in the womb, tearing up babies in the womb. We're having to defend that. We're having to defend the notion that male and female fit together. Yeah. And we're having to defend the most fundamental components of a husband and wife coming together, which has been normal since the beginning of history, and defend the right of a baby to have life. Is that not shocking how far we've gone towards Nazi Germany and other kind of dictatorships of this magnitude?
Mm-hmm. I have to believe that we know who's going to win this battle in the end, and it is our job to figure out fundamentally how to create, as Pastor Garlow is doing, thriving Christian homes, you know, the domestic church inside our own homes, to pass on the faith to our children, to build a thriving Christian subculture that can witness in our own lives to this truth about marriage.
Yeah.
Because I think it's going to get very bad out there, and I think just as it did in the early days of the Roman Empire, that there is going to be a sense that if we do our jobs, that Christianity offers the only real alternative to an increasingly debauched public square.
Mm. Maggie, I think you implied during the first program that we should not consider the Supreme Court decision and ruling to be a done deal, that maybe the Supreme Court will not redefine
yes.
marriage. Fill that out.
Well, first of all, we'll find out in now a couple of weeks, basically in June. I would bet that the Supreme Court now has 5 votes for same-sex marriage. But Anthony Kennedy may step back from the breach and say, well, I've done enough. We'll leave it up to the states and the democratic process. You know, if I were a betting woman, I wouldn't put my bet on that. But we will find out. And we have to be prepared either way. Either way, the progressive left is bound and determined to impose its morality on America. And it is determined to do it in a way that is deeply dehumanizing of the people like us who disagree with it. The level of hatred, open hatred, directed at you if you just say, I think marriage is one man and one woman because children need a mom and a dad. If you don't say anything else but that, it is extraordinary. In the Memories Pizza case, there was actually a high school teacher who tweeted, anyone want to go there and burn down that place, right? Educated people express, powerful people, socially empowered people are expressing incredible hatred against traditional believers in this country. And I think whatever the Supreme Court rules, we are going to have to summon the courage to stand and to fight for our right to exist and for our children's right to receive a Christian education. Nothing is going to be given to us. We are going to have the courage and the wisdom to fight.
Let me share a story with my guests here and also with our listeners out there. This is a highlight for me that occurred in the 1980s. I was appointed to be a member, a commissioner, on the Attorney General's Commission on Pornography. And that was the toughest thing I've ever tried to do because of what we were exposed to and the conflict that was going on inside the commission. There were 11 commissioners there. But we came down to the end of that commission where we were going to decide what to do in a way of recommendations being made to the federal government. And there were two proposals on the table. One of them was 2,000 pages long. It contained all of the research that had been given to us in the course of this process. And it also had recommendations for change. And then the other proposal was a little 40-page report that whitewashed all of pornography. And the night before the commission ended, we voted on which one to submit. And I lost that election 10-1. There was not a single person there who voted for the 2,000-page report. And by the way, Ted Bundy, who was, of course, guilty and eventually executed for killing 28 women and girls, read that 2,000-page report and was greatly influenced by it. So it was so important that we get it out there. But I lost, and I was depressed, and I went back. And I called home and I told my colleagues, I was then at Focus on the Family, called my colleagues and I said, it's time to pray. Pray for the outcome here because I've done everything I could do. The next day, they met at lunchtime on the parking lot. They met out there and held hands and they fasted and they began praying and they prayed about this decision. And you had about 300 people, I guess, out there who were praying and asking the Lord for a miracle. The next morning, the most influential member of the commission, the man who had really played the greatest role in the direction that it went, came in. He was both a lawyer and a psychiatrist. I'm not going to name him because I don't have his permission to do it. He came in and he was not a Christian, decidedly so, by his own statement. He came in and he said, I couldn't sleep last night. By the way, one of the prayers they were praying is that the Lord would trouble him in his sleep. He came in and said, I couldn't sleep because what I thought of all night is that I saw this as a social issue. And now I see it as a moral issue, and I'm not comfortable with the way I voted. And he began talking, and so did everybody else. And I won that final vote. I say I was just one of them, 10-1. That's what prayer can do. Now, you know, some people will say it would have happened anyway. I believe it happened because of the prayers of those people. It could happen this time also if God's people and the churches out there will begin to pray. Another miracle could occur.
I agree with that. If you go back and just look at what the Pew Research poll released last September 22, of a shift taking place in America, which I think is caused by this massive overreach of government. Even people who might not necessarily be with us on some of the issues see the overreach and the coercive nature of our government. In that Pew poll, what it indicates, 75% of Americans believe religion's losing influence, 6 out of 10 Americans saying that's not good, and for the first time, some lines crossed in recent years, and that is that the more people wanted churches to speak out on social and political issues than did not want their churches to speak on social and political issues. It had changed dramatically in the last 2 years, and especially the last 4 years. It crossed and became 49% versus 48%. Admittedly close, but it had changed and it had crossed. And moving very quickly, those lines had crossed on that graph. And I would contend that that could be an early embryonic indicator of the spiritual revival we all long for that's going to have to change the hearts of people miraculously, like a vote from 1-10 to 10-1. That's the kind of thing we're going to have to see, a parting of the Red Sea spiritually touching the hearts of people. And I believe that can happen.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we've got to get people praying, and I believe they are. Have you seen evidence of that, Brian?
Oh, I've been amazed at how so many different faith groups are independently starting fasting and prayer over what the Supreme Court is doing. So, for example, the March for Marriage is coming up.
Where is that?
That's in Washington, D.C. It's April 25th in Washington, D.C., right before the Capitol. There will be the Papal Nuncio will be there, the president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, one of the prelates of the Church of God in Christ, the largest black Pentecostal church in the country. The Hispanic Clergy Association of New York is bringing 120 buses from the Bronx. And these are all different denominations, different groups that are now witnessing the importance of this moment, and they are fasting, they are praying on the buses
down.
Praise
the Lord.
And so
that's the best news I've heard.
It's starting, and they're coming together. And it is true that there's been, I know Maggie, you, many people have been saying, this is what we're going to face. We're going to face persecution. We're going to face, there are going to be consequences. But just because we've been saying it doesn't mean people have been listening and acting on it. I feel like now, because the court has taken the case, people are starting to really wake up. Also, the failure of the Religious Liberty Bill in Indiana, the persecution that we're seeing of Christians, everything's sort of coming together. And I'm seeing firsthand all of these different groups trying, coming together, praying, and acting. I think that's critical. As in the story you brought up, you were there, you were acting, you were a member of the commission, you did what God called you to do, and you also prayed. We need to do both. We can't use prayer as an excuse to stay behind the four walls of our church, but we can't expect that just because we go outside the four walls, we think we're going to go out there and change the world. We got to do both. We have a great God. Nothing is impossible. Even a vote of the Supreme Court is not outside of his hand. So we've got to do what we can now. I agree with Maggie. We've got to be prepared for a bad decision. But the decision hasn't been made yet, folks. Let's not act like it's done.
Maggie, we just have time for a final comment from you.
Well, the two great halves of humanity, male and female, have to come together in love to make and raise the next generation. The future is going to belong, whether sooner or later, to those of us who can not only sustain this as an ideal and commit to it, but commit to it in our personal lives and in our children's lives. Mm-hmm. So it will be a great tearing apart and then a chance to rebuild. That's what we're facing with God's grace.
Jim, Dr. Dobson, you were with us at Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego at the culmination of a 40-day fast where Maggie and Brian were so involved with us on Prop 8, and we were behind in the field polls originally, 38% to 55%. No proposition had ever started in the negative that had ever won in the history of California. And the fasting and prayer that went in for 40 days, tens of thousands did, 33,000 of us met in the stadium that day. You were there and you spoke to us.
Oh, that was so impressive and so inspirational.
And we saw that. Maggie and Brian and I had the privilege of seeing that change, and we won 52.3%. God did it then. He can do it again.
Oh, my. Thank you all for being with us. Dr. Jim Garlow, Brian Brown, and Maggie Gallagher, I love the three of you and the whole Christian community that's coming together on this issue. We're not the only ones concerned about it, and I'm grateful that there are many, many others who are out there praying. Prayer is the key, right?
Yes, it is.
Absolutely.
And we're not going to be successful without the Lord's intervention. Mm-hmm. Thank you for being with us, and we'll do it again.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have been listening to an interview with my dad, Dr. James Dobson, and a panel of experts on the upcoming Supreme Court decision regarding gay marriage here on Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and don't forget, this weekend is the March for Marriage, and you can be involved. Go to marchformarriage.com, again, marchformarriage.com, to find out how you can get involved. Also, regardless of what the Supreme Court decides, Family Talk will still be here, fighting to preserve and promote the institution of the family and to stand for righteousness in the culture. And you can help us do that today. generous friends of Family Talk have stepped forward with a $200,000 conditional match that will double your gift. Call 877-732-6825 or click the Donate tab at drjamesdobson.org. This match is only available to us for one more week, so now is the time to get involved. As a thank you for your donation, we'll send you my dad's newest book, Your Legacy, and the DVD that corresponds with it from our Building a Family Legacy film series. Again, 877-732-6825 or click the Donate tab at drjamesdobson.org. Coming up next time, Dr. James Dobson shares with us how we got to the point in history where the Supreme Court is overstepping their bounds and trying to legislate on marriage. This is Ryan Dobson saying God bless, thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.